Today's Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Creed 3, The Mandalorian Season 3, Children of the Corn, and a look back at Raiders of the Lost Ark and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Devotion. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Just a note about the box office. Last weekend, there was a huge drop for Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. It still ruled the weekend, but it had $32 million. It dropped almost 70%. And that made a lot of news, and I've said this before last week, there are people out there that are just chomping at the bit waiting for a Marvel movie to fail. They want to see you fail. There is a group, especially in terms of box office reporting and film critics out there, and so they're just trying to find some way to report that the Marvel films are on their way out. But this kind of a second weekend drop is nothing new. I mean, you saw this in stuff like Doctor Strange and Thor, Love and Thunder. These movies, especially if you get franchise films, when you get deep enough into a franchise, they're extremely front-loaded. Not to mention the fact that Ant-Man and the Wasp is going to be on streaming in a couple months anyway. So there's not a need-to-see-right-away factor to it. And then Cocaine Bear overperformed at number two, with over $23 million. Now, keep in mind, the way this is reported is Cocaine Bear is a huge success and Marvel's Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, is a flop. But that's not really true, because more people saw Ant-Man this last weekend and its second weekend after a huge drop than saw Cocaine Bear. It's based on risk and return. It's because Cocaine Bear had a much smaller box office and wasn't a franchise movie. But still, more people are interested in the Ant-Man films. You just got to look at it in perspective. And then similarly, Jesus Revolution came in with almost $16 million at number three, and that's really quite good for a movie of that size. Again, not as popular as Ant-Man, not even as popular as Cocaine Bear, but because it overperformed is what gave it a little bit of a push. Now, the next thing I want to talk about is not necessarily about movies, but it's about entertainment, and I think it's worth mentioning. Roald Dahl's books, if you, I'm sure, heard, the language is being adjusted for sensitivity content. And stuff like, for example, the character of Augustus Gloop in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is originally referred to as fat, as a pejorative way. And I think they changed the word to enormous. I've not done a deep dive into how they're changing everything, so I don't know exactly how the language is being massaged. And there are some people that are outraged and upset about that. And on the heels of that, you had the announcement that the James Bond books, the original ones written by Ian Fleming, are also going through some minor sensitivity edits. And that upsets a lot of people. And this reminds me of the whole thing that was going on with Dr. Seuss a couple of years ago, where the people who had the rights to it decided, hey, we're going to pull these from publication, these five obscure books that nobody reads anyways. And then people got all upset. I mean, to the point that they were reading Green Eggs and Ham into the Congressional Record, even though that was not on the chopping block. I understand people getting upset when literature is edited. But here's the thing. If you're upset about the Roald Dahl thing and the James Bond thing, let me introduce you to Agatha Christie and Mark Twain. Mark Twain wrote Huckleberry Finn, or The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, and that famously has a character named Jim. Well, his name's not Jim. The original name is N-word Jim, because he was an old slave, and the book was written over 100 years ago when that word was not the taboo it is now, and so they've changed it. They took it out. This has been done before. Or take Agatha Christie with the book And Then There Were None. And Then There Were None was not the original title. The original title was 10 Little N-Words back in the 30s, because that word was not taboo the way it is now. And even when it was published in America, they changed it to 10 Little Indians, because the N-word was already very pejorative in American setting. And now it's called And Then There Were None because it's not a dangerous word or anything like that. Here's where I defend this. It's not the government making him do this. It's not any sort of shadow entity coming in and saying you have to make these edits. These are the people who own the rights to the books. Same thing with the Roald Dahl. The people who own the rights to the Roald Dahl books are the ones doing it. It's not some government entity or some school board making them make that change. And the James Bond edits in particular, I've recently read some of the James Bond, and there's some very problematic language, especially when you get into Live and Let Die, which takes place in Harlem, and it has Black American gangsters in it, and they use a lot of not just unsavory language that's thrown around there, just sort of the antiquated way they refer to a person of color is very, it's triggering, we'll just say. And even if you go into some of the other books, there's sexual and misogynistic things that really don't reflect, I guess, the values of today. And apparently Ian Fleming was actually okay with changing some of the language of the Live and Let Die, even way back in the 60s before he passed away. Here's the other reason why, not just because they own the rights, but these books, the Roald Dahl books, the James Bond books, Agatha Christie's, and then there were none, all these books are read as popular fiction still today. They're not some historical relic. If you take the Nathaniel Hawthorne, Scarlet Letter, I don't think anybody's reading that for summer reading. Most people who read that, it's for a literature course. But there's a lot of people who will read the James Bond movies for entertainment, as I have. Or Agatha Christie, or Roald Dahl, especially kids. It's a marketing thing. It's a business thing. You don't want to have this triggering language in that because you're going to turn off readers and not going to get people to read your books. If you don't make these changes, you're going to have fewer and fewer people reading it. It's a business decision by the people who own the rights. I think it's fine that they're going to be having editions that are unfiltered and unchanged, but we're also not talking about rewriting them. We're talking about changing some language. And you may not like that, but that's the right of the people doing it, and they're doing it so they can sell more books as a business decision. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Let's talk about Agent Elvis, which is coming to Netflix on March 17th.
Who are you people, and what is all this?
The chance to weaponize rock and roll.
Time for Elvis to become an agent.
Viva Las Vegas!
I'm not stealing from the president.
It's not stealing if it's not his. Same way, it's not murder if you do it with your eyes closed. Now go!
Loving the weird energy right now.
Bright light city, gonna set my
kick-ass spy gadgets.
Set my soul on fire.
Insanely dangerous.
I guarantee a very abrupt, violent death.
This is an animated series on Netflix. It stars Matthew McConaughey as the king of rock and roll who becomes a secret agent. I mean, I don't know much about this property. I don't know if it existed beforehand, but I'm intrigued. It looks like it's going to be an Archer version of Elvis, which, for the record, I'm all in for. It looks like it'll be funny. I'm looking forward to it. Seeing it in a couple weeks on Netflix. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Haunted Mansion, which is coming to theaters on July 28th.
Welcome home. I know this place isn't as warm as I'd hoped. But I'm going to light a vanilla candle, and it's going to be a game changer.
Will it, though?
We're out.
This mansion is unhinged. She needs all the help she can get.
You want to be a hero?
Pass.
$2,000.
What's the address?
This is the latest version of the Haunted Mansion that Disney has been trying to like make into a big movie for years. They did that one with Eddie Murphy, like, I don't know, 15 more years ago. And that one was okay, but that was before Disney really had a handle on making movies that weren't Disney Channel style. And then they did the Muppets Haunted Mansion, which I actually thought was quite clever. And that went directly to Disney Plus. I'll look forward to this one. It's going to be in theaters. I don't know if it's going to be a big blockbuster, but we'll have to check it out in July. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Raiders of the Lost Ark and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Oh, oh, I love you so. Oh, I can't let you go.
We all love the Manscaped personal grooming products, but we all come to a personal quandary when wanting to trim above the equator. Now there's a solution. Manscaped now sells beard products. The Beard Hedger Pro Kit comes with all you'll need to keep your furry face under control, from a trim to a fresh shave. And when you use the code FATGUYS, you get 20% off and free shipping. The Beard Hedger is a cordless trimmer that uses a single rotary blade with 20 hair-cutting lengths. And you know what that means? No keeping track of multiple attachments, dropping them on the floor, and having them fly under the toilet. It's one guard that gives you multiple options. The titanium-coated T-blades cut through the facial hair quickly and smoothly, while Manscaped keeps your face as safe as your privates. The Beard Hedger Pro Kit includes additional accoutrements, like a specialized beard shampoo and conditioner, because your hair on your face isn't the same as the hair on your head, or anywhere else. There's also the Manscaped Beard Oil and Beard Balm, and the kit also includes a beard brush, a specialized beard comb, and scissors to clean up any strays. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com, and use code FATGUYS. Manscaped Beard Hedger. One stroke, one guard, 20 lengths. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews, and I'm actually going to take a jump into the past and talk about a couple older movies, mainly because we've got a new Indiana Jones movie coming out this summer. I thought it was a good time to go back and look at the Indiana Jones movies. I did this 15 years ago when Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull came out, and so I'm going to do this now. I loved the Indiana Jones movies. I was like 9 or 10 when the first one came out. And I loved Raiders, and I went on to see Temple of Doom and everything else in theaters. So I've been through the whole Indiana Jones experience as a viewer. Let's start off with the big one, the one that kicked it all off, and that is Raiders of the Lost Ark. A swashbuckling archaeologist tries to find the Lost Ark of the Covenant before the Nazis do.
For nearly 3,000 years, man has searched for the Lost Ark of the Covenant.
The Bible speaks of the Ark leveling mountains and laying waste to entire regions.
Not something to be taken lightly. No one knows its secrets.
Jones, do you realize what the Ark is? It's a transmitter. It's a radio for speaking to God.
An army which carries the Ark before it is invincible.
There's something special about Raiders of the Lost Ark. And before I even talk about the film, I just a note about the sequels. It's foolish to believe you're going to get sequels that are the same as the original. You never do. That's not how sequels work. Part of what makes Raiders of the Lost Ark work is the discovery of this character. And it's based on these serials. That's how both Lucas and Spielberg set these up as a nod to these serials that played before movies, you know, these like chapters. There are like 15 chapters of them, and that's what they were based on. And there's a discovery that goes on in there. And Lucas was talking about this in great depth with the Star Wars stuff, is you kind of hit these stories and you kind of have to catch up, and they're really not about in-depth character development. Even if you look at Raiders of the Lost Ark, as good as the characters are, they're not developed necessarily. They're these archetypes that are just expertly put in. The Scoundrel Adventurer, that's nothing new. That was Indiana Jones. And Marion as the jilted lover from long time ago, that's nothing new. The bad guys are nothing new. It's just really well put together. It takes a lot of elements of cliche and archetypes, and it just fits them together exceedingly well. It takes itself very seriously because at this time, it didn't know what it was going to become. They were just making an adventure. They didn't know they were making a kid's movie, for lack of a better term. If you watch Raiders of the Lost Ark, it does not scream kid's movie. Because it's got some very gory stuff. It's got some very extreme stuff. It's got a lot of violence to it. But boy, did it click with an audience of my age. I was 9 when it came out. So I know firsthand how important that was to my development as watching movies. I mean, that was right in the middle of the Star Wars stuff. It was made right between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. And so that's part of the reason why it seems to be appealing to an older audience and a more mature audience. And that's why a lot of people, I think, look back on it very fondly. But it's just, it's an efficiently well-told story. And it's just fun. Like I said, there's nothing really groundbreaking. If you look at the characters and the arcs, there's no fantastic, nuance to the characters. They're very well done models and maquettes put into a rip-roaring adventure story. And boy, does it work. It's such a good movie. As a blockbuster, you can tell why it just breezes by. It's a brilliantly done film. I mean, it's still the gold standard of 80s action. It's the perfect blend of strong storytelling and nostalgia. And those things are not necessarily deep. They're just done extremely well. It's just a very, very well-made hamburger. But it's still a fast food hamburger. You know, that's giving my comparison to something like The Menu. But I'm still going to say I loved Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's totally awesome. I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. A little more troubling here. Before the events of Raiders, Indiana Jones is stranded in India and must retrieve a sacred stone from an ancient violent cult.
The old legend of the Shankara stones. The villager's sacred rock was taken.
Village stories, Dr. Jones.
Fortune and glory, kid. Fortune and glory.
Come on!
I don't want to go!
You know how to fly, don't you?
No. Do you?
Now, here's the one that everyone dumped on before Kingdom of the Crystal Skull came out. Because it was too childish. We brought in this kid. Short round. Why do we need a kid? Why do we always need to have a kid? I'm one of those people who, when I see a movie and they just throw a kid in there, you're like, ugh. That's something. But, you know, the Ke-Huy Quan as Short Round was actually quite good. I mean, he was not the annoying kid. And you got to hand it to Spielberg. He can pick kids that are not annoying in a movie. That's what worked in Jurassic Park, for the most part. That's what worked in E.T. Spielberg's very good at that. And so the Short Round works in this movie. And yeah, you got Willie Scott, played by Kate Capshaw, and she's not well-developed at all. But of course, you can't have her too developed because she didn't show up anywhere in Raiders, so she's got to be kind of a fling. But I know one of the things people didn't like about it is it was too much action. It was just trying to be too much of this over-the-top crazy. But that's what it was. That's what the Indiana Jones movies are meant to be. They're serials. And there's something about putting the religious elements to it, like the old Judeo-Christian religious elements. And I'm getting ahead of myself. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to talk about The Last Crusade, where in Raiders and The Last Crusade, those are Judeo-Christian artifacts that have magical powers, and they go after them. But there was more to serials than just Judeo-Christian artifacts. And even then, those were not the MacGuffins in every single thing. They had a lot of jungle adventures where people had these ancient cults, and they were cheesy and stupid, but putting somebody in the jungle and having them go after some sort of native artifact, that was all over the serials back in the 40s. And that's really what Temple of Doom's going for. It takes place in India. Its artifacts are wholly different than what they're going after in Raiders of the Lost Ark. No, you don't have Nazis. You just have him trying to help out some people. But I think that's one of the things that people are going, well, I wanted Nazis and I wanted the Lost Ark and I got this stupid stone in India. But that tracks with the swashbuckling jungle adventures that this is based on. Going back and rewatching Temple of Doom after many, many years, and I loved it when I was, because I was like 13 when that came out, 12 or 13. And I was the target market. I was right around the age of Short Round. And I thought it was a blast. And yes, it is very, very heavy on the action. This is also very much a pure action movie. Yes, it has gore. Yes, it has violence. Yes, it helped usher in the PG-13 rating. Because it was a PG movie where they ripped the heart out of this guy and set it on fire. Yeah, there's some underlying racism, especially in the dinner scene, where, of course, the Indians eat crazy eels and bugs and everything like that. But this is still an exciting thing to watch. I mean, it leans more into family adventure, but this is still tons of fun and an exciting throwback to the jungle adventure serials. It works. It clicks. It does exactly what Lucas and Spielberg were trying to do. It wasn't Raiders, and it wasn't Raiders for reasons that it couldn't be Raiders. It was never going to be Raiders, and that's okay. I'm still going to say Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we've got Creed 3 and Children of the Corn. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Now that we've talked about some older films, looking ahead to newer films, we're going to talk about the brand new film that's coming out this week that's in theaters now, and that is Creed 3. Adonis Creed must come out of retirement to face a challenge from his past.
Let me get an autograph.
No, I ain't signing an autograph, but get off my car.
You don't remember me, huh?
Damn it.
How long were you locked up?
18 years, bro.
Curious what happened with you two?
I didn't tell you. We was like brothers. I was the best, though. Man, I never got a chance to prove that.
I know what you're doing, Donnie.
You don't owe this dude nothing.
I'm coming for everything. You threatening me?
I'm not a big fan of the Creed movies. I like the Rocky movies, and there's something really charming about them. And a lot of it comes down to Stallone and the character of Rocky that he built all the way back in, what was it, 1976 when the first one came out? Part of my issue with the Creed movies is Adonis Creed, I don't think is a good character. I don't think he's a good person, for that matter. One of the things I love about Rocky is he's a kind-hearted good guy, trying to do the right thing, sort of shackled by circumstance. He really only knows violence, and he channels it into something of greatness. And especially that first movie, all he wants to do is prove himself, just go the distance. And he's got flaws for miles. But at his soul, at his heart, he's a sweet, loving guy. Adonis Creed has had a chip on his shoulder for three freaking movies. Adonis Creed is arrogant, impulsive. He's kind of a jerk. He does not learn. Every single movie, he's back to where he is, being this, you know, impulsive upstart. And it's like, oh my God, grow as a character, for crying out loud. That's my problem with the Creed movies. I just do not like the character of Adonis Creed. I never have. So with that said, take it with a grain of salt what I'm going to say, because all of that is burdened by my problems I have with the Adonis Creed character. Because in this movie, he's retired as the champion, and now he's trying to manage. He's trying to be the manager as a boxer, and he's kind of a jerk. Yeah, he's a family man, but I mean, there's this weird entitlement that there's even one scene where they're talking about how awesome their lives are. And oh yeah, my wife, the wife, oh, I'm deaf, but I'm also a multi-platinum winning producer. I'm just like, I'm like, dial it back. Okay. Just can we have normal people in the movie? So the story is this character, Damien, who comes back from his past, who's played by Jonathan Majors. He's been in prison, so he wants to have a chance to be a boxer again. And he sort of, you know, worms his way in there and sort of manipulates the situation. But the problem is it's so easily seen that it's manipulated. There's no surprise to it. There's no subtlety to it. The character of Damien is far more nuanced and developed than the character of Adonis. And then you shouldn't have that in your third movie. You've had two movies to develop a character. Why is he still shallow and stupid? And here's the problem. When you have the antagonist, played by Jonathan Majors, who's having a heck of a year right now, because he plays Kang in the Marvel movies, and he was in Devotion last year, he was in Lovecraft Country, he was in The Harder They Fall. He's got quite a career that's just moving as a juggernaut right now. But that character is far more compelling and far more interesting and far more identifiable than Adonis Creed. I mean, Adonis Creed is just manipulated into everything. He's just an idiot. The character of Rocky was never like a super smart guy, but he followed his heart and he always wanted to do the right thing. And Adonis Creed is just not a good character. That's my problem. And to make it even worse, Rocky's not even in this movie. I mean, he's been in the other ones. This is like the ninth Rocky movie, if you count all those, but Rocky's not even in it. And there's a heart and soul that he carried and brought to those first two Creed movies, and he's not in it at all. Michael B. Jordan directs it, actually. And he does fine, but look, I can't tell whether he does a good job directing or not, because a lot of times when you take a star and then they start directing, it's very hard to direct and act in a movie. I don't know how much of this was really Michael B. Jordan directing it or somebody holding his hand and helping him along. Because you can just put somebody in as a figurehead, and if you've got enough of a machinery in place and a good enough producer, you don't actually need a good director. So jury's still out on whether Jordan's a decent director. But it's got all the stuff that's going to make people cheer. If you like the first two Creed movies, you're going to like this one. It's probably going to do very well. I mean, it has the crowd-pleasing moments, sure. But the unlikability of the main character and the obvious absence of Rocky makes this a bit of a chore. I'm going to say that Creed 3 kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Children of the Corn. The children in a rural community stage a violent uprising against the adults.
Based on the short story by Stephen King, comes the nightmare like you've never seen it before.
I know. It sucks. But I can help with your pain. He who walks, he talked to me. He took care of me. So now I'm going to take care of him.
By killing all the adults.
For starters.
I don't know if there have been more Rocky movies made or more Children of the Corn movies made. I have a confession to make. I've seen the original Children of the Corn from, 1984? The Dino De Laurentiis movie with Linda Hamilton and Peter Horton. I've seen that a couple times. It's not a great movie, and it's not a great adaptation. I've read the story. The Stephen King short story is very interesting. One of the things that's so frustrating as a horror fan, and again, as somebody, I've not seen all the Children of the Corn movies, but I've definitely heard this about them. They've never done a good, solid adaptation of Children of the Corn. Part of it is the story of Children of the Corn is very shocking. It's not satisfying for the hero standpoint. It's dark, and it's not a happy ending. And I think that's one of the problems with these adaptations. There are elements to Children of the Corn that adapt into a movie very well. The corn motif is fantastic. Look, I live in Ohio. I live in Columbus, Ohio. We literally have a monument in this town, a monument to corn, giant ears of corn in a field. We call it Cornhenge out here. It's stupid. They're 6 foot tall ears of corn in a field. Just in the middle of a business center. It's a joke. People like literally go and bring people. I had a friend come from out of town when he took pictures of Cornhenge. So I don't live in Nebraska, but Ohio's good enough. If you've never walked through a cornfield, you have no idea how terrifying it could be, especially at night. And they'll have things like corn mazes and that kind of thing around Halloween and stuff. The corn is so tall you can't see outside of it and it encompasses you. So there's a lot of visuals with corn. And I totally understand that can be very disturbing and creepy. But then again, you can't just go on visuals. Now, this movie itself is, there's some unique ideas to it where they seem to imply, at least at the beginning, that this is not a spiritual thing, which is what was from the original story, but more maybe something in the water, so to speak. Something like that movie Impulse I talked about, I don't know, about a year ago. That's another movie from the 80s with the town going nuts. And this just feels so low rent. And this is the kind of movie you should be able to make that doesn't feel low rent, because you're shooting it in the middle of a cornfield pretty much. The production value on this, you get tons of production value for not much cost, because finding abandoned cornfields and available farm areas is very easy to do in this country. The story just does not click. It just feels cheap. I've seen small, intimate, creepy movies that are made on a very small budget that have so much more horror movie power than this one, where it feels like another direct-to-video Children of the Corn movie. And that's kind of a shame. I mean, go make a good adaptation of the original story. At least do that once after, 11 films? I mean, weighted down by the director's schizophrenic vision where he doesn't know what it's about. This continues to demonstrate that Hollywood is flailing while trying to make a worthy adaptation of the Stephen King story. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to say that Children of the Corn kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about The Mandalorian Season 3 and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Devotion.
Pump up the jam, pump it up while your feet are stumping. And the jam is pumping. Look ahead, the crowd is jumping.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the reviews and talk about a TV series. And that is The Mandalorian Season 3. Din Djarin and Grogu team up with other disgraced Mandalorians to claim their rightful heritage from Mandalore.
Being a Mandalorian is not just learning about how to fight. You also have to know how to navigate the galaxy. That way, you'll never be lost. I'm going to Mandalore so that I may be forgiven for my transgressions.
May the Force be with you!
This is the way.
I just have to remind everybody I'm a Star Wars baby. I saw Star Wars when I was 5. And I have, for the most part, liked most everything that comes out of the Star Wars visual films, whether you're talking about the feature films or the TV movies or the ongoing series that they're doing on Disney Plus. I don't watch as much of the animated stuff because I just don't have time, but I do love these live action series. And I liked The Mandalorian ever since it started. I was a big fan for the first 2 seasons. And I loved Book of Boba Fett. I know that is not what people are supposed to say. People are supposed to slag on the Book of Boba Fett. But doggone it, I liked it. I don't think there's anything wrong with leaning into nostalgia and the greatest hits when it comes to the Star Wars movies. That's what they're based on. They are based on serials. I talked about this when I was talking about the Indiana Jones movies earlier. It's okay for them to be fun adventure stories. And then when Andor came out, and Andor's fine. I just think Andor is kind of boring. Andor takes forever for anything to happen. And it is all about cameras on people brooding in the corner. People say, oh, but it's so great. It's this nuanced, layered character. No, it's not. It's just they take longer to shoot it. I don't think Andor is a great revelation. And I'm seeing people that I know reviewing and then saying, oh, I wanted something more like Andor. Why did you think it was going to be something like Andor? It's going to be like the other 2 seasons of The Mandalorian. It's the same show. I mean, it's the 3rd season of that show, and the first 2 seasons did very well. Why are they going to change it and completely change the tone and the style of this series to match something else that at the time of producing this, they didn't know was going to be a hit with a certain group of people? But what you're seeing is you're seeing people gravitate towards, and I'm going to put like The Last Jedi and Andor in one category, and then sort of like the more the Force Awakens, Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett in a different one. And the reality is the Star Wars universe is big enough for everybody. And so with The Mandalorian in Season 3, you've got The Mandalorian and you've got Grogu, Baby Yoda, together again. By the way, if you did not watch Book of Boba Fett and you've just seen the end of Mandalorian 2, you're going to want to go at least dig up the Mandalorian episode of the Book of Boba Fett because it serves as a bridge. It explains why Grogu's back with the Mandalorian. And this is him trying to reclaim his title as a Mandalorian because he took off his helmet, which there's so many. I have so many questions about that. They're not allowed to take off their helmet. How do they brush their teeth? How do they wash their hair? He's got a mustache. Why does he not have a... Does he shave under that? How do you shave under that? And then why do you shave? What is the necessity of shaving if you never take off your helmet? And my God, how much do you stink? And then that's my other question. Does he take off the rest of his armor and shower with the helmet on? There's so many questions I have. Which I think the whole never take off your helmet, that's a Judge Dredd type thing. I'm just saying, that I think is a dumb thing. I mean, it makes it look good in comics and in movies, but there's so many questions. Anyways, this is fine. It starts off a little bit slow. I mean, it has the action sequences. You know, you've got the other Mandalorians doing stuff, and you've got a big monster battle, and you've got some ships shooting at each other. And you are playing the hits because you bring back Grogu, you bring back the Mandalorian. He goes and he sees Carl Weathers. He sees Apollo Creed. You know, so you've got all this kind of stuff going on that's pulling from the other episodes, and that's fine. That's okay. You can do that. You're a series. You're allowed to do that. You don't have to start your own thing and do something totally different every single time. There's nothing wrong with leaning into what's familiar. So the first episode's a little bit slow, and it picks up in the next episode, which I've seen already. It's next week. But, I mean, it feels very much like the Mandalorian going to a different place, and they've got more going on with the other Mandalorians, like Katie Sackhoff's character. I forget the name. It's a Star Wars-y name. But she's in there, and looks like she's going to have a bigger part in this one. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the season. I think it's a bit of a slow start, but it leans into what worked with the previous seasons to continue the story. I like The Mandalorian. I like Star Wars. And I'm not ashamed to admit it. So I'm going to say that The Mandalorian Season 3 totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Devotion, which hits DVD and Blu-ray this week, or hit DVD and Blu-ray this week. If you want to watch it and you don't have the disc, you can watch it on Paramount Plus. It is available there. The true story that follows the struggles of a black aviator on the eve of the Korean War in the early 1950s.
It's good to know the men you're flying with. See what they're fighting for.
What are you fighting for?
Hoping to find that out.
Try to keep up.
This is war. And we're up.
Can't tell you how many times people have told me to give up and quit. Die even.
This movie had an unfortunate release. Because it came out, something like 5 months after Top Gun? So if you wanted to see a movie about fighter planes, most people went and saw Top Gun last year. And one of the guys who's in this movie, Glenn Powell, is also in Top Gun. So it seemed, when you watch the trailers and you see the posters and you know what this is about, this almost feels like The Asylum put together their own Top Gun. Top Gun Devotion. And it's not. I mean, they didn't do that, and they weren't expecting it, because this movie was put in the pipeline before they probably even knew Top Gun was going to come out at what time, because that one got delayed so much. That was supposed to have been out years ago. But the fact that you had a second fighter pilot movie, it really got overshadowed. I feel bad for the movie. Now, Jonathan Majors plays, I guess, the main character. That's part of the problem with the film. I don't know who the main character is. Is it Glenn Powell's character or Jonathan Majors' character? Because really, it's Jonathan Majors' film. He's the black aviator who's dealing with the struggles of being a black aviator in the early 1950s. And the racism he's facing, sometimes casual, sometimes just overt. Not just in America, but in other countries. Like at one point they're in France and he has trouble getting served at a bar. And so it's really his arc. It's his story of wanting to become this fighter pilot. But really, it's framed as Glenn Powell's character story. And I guess they're trying to do a little bit of the Holmes and Watson thing where he's the involved narrator, because it is based on the true story of this friendship between these two guys. So they have to kind of give them both service in the movie. But he just feels like you're like, why is it this guy the main character when it really is the other guy is the main character? That makes it a very clunky narrative. Now, the aviation scenes, that they're actually really good. And some of the people who worked on Top Gun worked on this one. And it's not the best historic fighter pilot movie. I mean, even that movie Flyboys that had James Franco in it like 15 years ago, that one that's a really interesting look at the realities of being a pilot. And that back then it was a World War I movie. But some of the editing is a little weird and wonky in the flight scenes, but overall, I mean, it really gives you that feel of being in the cockpit. It's a well done movie in that respect, and it's got some good special effects. like I said, the biggest problem is that clunky storyline. I mean, the characters are going places. I mean, it's a little bit overwritten. The character of that Jonathan Major plays is a little bit overwritten. And you're going to get that. That's one of the problems whenever you have a movie that's about somebody who you're meant to honor. You don't get a realistic view of that person because you don't want to do them a disservice. And I get that. But it does get in the way of the movie. It his biggest flaws are he tries too hard kind of thing. So that's a structural problem with the character. And like I said, because it's dealing with a true story. But I mean, it's a pretty compelling movie. It has some pacing problems, but overall it's not bad. It's well made with thrilling aerial sequences, but the film falters when it tries to decide who the main character is. Still, I'm going to say it kind of rocks. It's worth checking out. It's on disc now. It's also on Paramount Plus.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Scream 6 and History of the World Part 2. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.